Welcome. We're glad you're here. I'm back. I was here from 9 o'clock to 1 o'clock today in for Dean Richards. Had a fun time there, but now we're back in the regular spot and looking to talk to you from inside the Allstate Showcase studio on a very busy Michigan Avenue. Oh, man, all day people been running around. There was a little art fair next door to us here in the in Pioneer Court next to Tribune Tower, so that's been fun. Now people are milling about. We've got some St. Louis fans, which is that's always unfortunate to see the jean shorts running around on Michigan Avenue from the St. Louis Cardinal fans as the Cubs get ready to play the Cardinals in just a little bit. Big show planned. As I said, it's always more fun when you get involved. 312-981-7200. When you call in, you'll be talking to Cody. It's so humid, I'm making my own gravy golf. He's the executive producer of the big broadcast. If you're nice to him, you get to me. You can also text us at that same number, 312-981-7200. Do you like social media? All the kids are doing it. The president tweets. You can tweet at us. It's Brian Newton Show on Facebook and Twitter. We have not gotten a tweet from the president. We expect to at some point. He seems to tweet at just about everybody, so we're looking forward to that. That'll be very exciting when that happens. Karen Conti will be here after 8 o'clock. She'll be answering your legal questions. We'll be talking about a wide variety of big legal stories. After 7 o'clock, a mentalist will come in to find out if I have any mental capacity. I don't know. No, he's coming in. He does mentalism, but he also does corporate speaking and corporate training, so that'll be very interesting. We'll talk to him. And then, of course, after 6:30, the big debate is a hot dog a sandwich? The answer has come down definitively. Not from me. I have my answer. You'll have your answer. But the Sausage Council, we've got an official answer. So glad to have you along with us. Roger, did you have a good week?
Yeah. Yeah, okay, it was a relaxing week.
Really?
But I had no doctor appointments.
Oh, my gosh.
I had no got to see this expert or that expert or run to the bank or any. No, I saw.
So, would you just sit in the house like a lump? You and the dog?
No. The dog did, not me.
The dog just sat in the house?
Yeah, he just sat in the house like a lump.
Doing all right? The dog doing all right?
Yeah, he's doing better.
There you go.
He's doing much better. And he gave me the sad little puppy dog eyes when I was leaving because Bridget is out with a friend today, so okay. He's home alone.
Yeah, but that's the only kind of eyes they can give you.
Yeah.
Really. I noticed mine give the same whether they're eating or laying down, whatever they're doing. It's the same forlorn look. And I'm like, what do you have to be sad about? My goodness, you have the life. Somebody comes and feeds you, I pick up after you. You have a couch to lay on. You look out the window. You go out in the yard. I take you for walks. Your life's pretty sweet. Don't look at me like that.
Yeah, right.
I'm not feeling guilty. You should feel guilty for me. Got to go out and bust my hump.
I know.
I don't know where. But, that's the line I give the dogs. I got to go out and bust my hump.
I take him out when I get home early in the morning over the weekend from working here. And because he hasn't gone all night long, so I'll take him out. And he just stands there and looks at me like, oh, okay, what am I doing now? I go, come on, go, because I ain't taking you in the middle of my nap.
Right, it's time to, you gotta go now.
Yeah, go, do your thing. He's going, I'm not moving anywhere.
I'll tell you what, our new dog, I think because he was, he spent first 2 years mostly in kennels.
Uh-huh.
That dog does not need to go out very often.
You know, because
he just, he gets, in the morning, I let him out. Before he'll go out, he has to eat. So he eats, then he goes out, then he'll come in, and he'll stay in all day. And will Rufus let you know if he needs to go out? Is there any sort of, does he bark? Does he nudge? Does he?
He kind of follows you, like, and gets in your way, and his tail is wagging like crazy. Right. Yeah, he'll let you know.
Because, see, our other dog, Gidget, she will stand by the back door and whine, so I know she has to go out. This one, I'm starting to learn, but he doesn't give any sort of indication except if I'm sitting, in the office doing some work.
Mm-hmm.
He's always on the couch looking out the window, just chilling. The dog sleeps like 22 hours a day. He doesn't have a lot of activity going except for his walk. And every once in a while, he'll like bolt off the couch and run in and hit me on the arm. And I've learned that's his signal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
He won't make a sound. Mm-hmm. And if you don't respond to that nudge, well, your fault.
Yeah.
That's just that. Well,
yeah, I saw people over the week, the people I hadn't seen in a long, long time.
Very nice.
Which was nice. A friend of mine from Evanston who just had his second hip done.
Wow.
He is home. And
I think we're starting to delve into what we should talk about at the deli over lunch.
Oh,
did you run into Bernie? He had a second hip. It was unbelievable. He had a little trouble the first time. The first one he didn't do well, but the second one he seems to be bouncing right back. It's amazing what they could do with technology nowadays. Yeah. It's all graphite, the new hip. It's all graphite and titanium. It's a weird hybrid of metals. It's unbelievable. Kind of like Iron Man. It's like Iron Man's suit, except in Bernie's hip.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you had a good week. We'll leave it at that.
Okay,
We don't need
the whole week.
Not that I'm not fascinated by it.
Well,
I'm
I posted about it. So what the heck?
But I'm fascinated. Some people may not be as fascinated as fascinated. Cody, for one, has given me the cut him off sign. Cody.
Oh, really?
Oh, sure. I'm sure he has his own story.
Mr. Frankenstein Castle, Cody Goff.
Cody, yes. Now he's posting all these pictures from his big trip to Germany.
Yeah.
He's wearing a trash bag in the rain. That didn't look very helpful.
It was a poncho.
Sure it was.
Yeah, sure.
It was raining.
Of course. You called it a garbage bag.
Yeah,
I'm saying what you called it. I knew it was one of those clear $3 ponchos.
Yeah, but we all
know. They don't do anything to keep you dry, really.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Did it?
That's waterproof.
Right, but then it all runs down and your legs get soaked. So your pants are all completely. Your pants and shoes are soaked.
I was wearing shorts.
Oh, well.
And I was wearing hiking boots that were waterproof.
Boots and shorts?
You really
were pretending you were Bavarian. What are you, one of the Von Trapps?
Did he yodel?
You're going to go over the mountain, Swiss Miss? What's going on with the hiking boots and the shorts?
It was a Frankenstein's castle. I can do whatever I want.
All right, listen, if that's how you want to play it, ugly American, you wear whatever you want.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's fine. You can do whatever you want. I can wear... Well, I guess if you were wearing lederhosen, you'd wear... they don't wear boots with lederhosen. Do they?
There
was some sort of Oxford shoe, like a nice hard Oxford. No? You don't know?
You're shaking me off.
Some kind of clogs.
Dude, footwear's out of my depth.
Yeah, this is the extent of my expertise.
I had to use that term earlier in the week, out of my depth.
Did you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm teaching kindergarten in summer school.
Yeah.
So you're out of your depth in kindergarten class?
No, I'm not out of my depth with kindergarten class. I'm out of my depth with some of the behavioral issues in some of the students in my class. And one kid had a complete meltdown.
Uh-oh.
And laid down in the middle of the carpet and refused to move. And I don't know if you've had a battle of wills with a five-year-old, but they don't usually end well.
Hmm.
And these are kids who, during the school year, are in co-taught classrooms or have like social workers who work with them, aides, things like that. Well, now, because it's summer school, all the kids kind of get mixed into gen pop. Everybody's together. So I have a number of kids who, during the school year, need a little extra help, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm not the guy who's trained to give them a little extra help. I can teach them the alphabet and how to add and how to count to 100 and stuff. But when it comes to serious psychological issues, I have no idea.
Well, what did you do?
Well, thankfully, the classroom right next door is manned by a special education teacher who I've worked with a lot before.
Okay.
So I kept... You know, you can't leave the room, especially
right.
when you've got 14 five-year-olds in there. Because they will immediately, it's like Gulliver's Travels, they will immediately tie somebody down and things will be on fire. It'll be like Lord of the Flies.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be a pig's head in there. Where did they get the pig's head? I don't know, but somehow it's on a spike.
And three of them will end up missing when you come
back. Yes.
They're gone.
So, even though I'm standing in the doorway,
right?
Somehow they've disappeared.
Yeah.
So I prop the door open with my foot, and I'm halfway out, and I knock on the other door.
Oh, jeez.
And now she has an aide because she has a special ed class.
Uh-huh.
And I said, hey, here's what's happening. What can I do? And she's like, just ignore him. I was like, really? She said, ignore him. So he's laying on the carpet having a little hissy. Then he falls asleep. Well, I have the other kids at their desks, and they're doing some work. But now it's 15 minutes, and I've got to move them back to the carpet so I can do a group thing with them.
Right.
Well,
he's asleep.
Well, he's
right in the middle of the carpet.
Yeah, right in the middle. So I try to wake him up.
Oh no!
And then he starts screaming again. He's not going to do it. So I said, hey, can you help me? So she came over and took him, and he left with her because now a new adult has come in. So he's going to respond. He goes with her, but then he did something later in the day to another student, so I take him to the office, and in the office, he starts swearing up a blue streak.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, unbelievable. So, I don't know. I don't know what to do, but...
I would have laid down with him and then invited all the other kids to lay down with me.
No, that's a little creepy. Yeah, I'm not laying down with a five-year-old. No.
No, just on the couch.
No. On
get
the couch.
Get a book and start...
Have him in a lounge? Some sort of... Come here.
And then
then all kind of weird stuff starts happening.
On the carpet.
I'm not... No. We're not doing that at all. I'm not laying down with a five-year-old. Nothing is going to happen. Because that's how the story gets twisted all of a sudden.
No.
Mr. Noonan was laying down with the students. Uh-uh. That ain't happening. I don't know what school you taught in. In fact, I do know what school you taught in. But I'm sure you never laid down with the students. Am I correct?
I'm trying to think.
Which then would explain your early release from the school system. All right, let's take a quick break, and then there's so much more here on WGN. Getting away with murder. Hear from local families fed up with unsolved killings. Why can't Chicago solve as many homicide cases as other cities? WGN-TV investigates Monday night at 9. Why'd we go with that? Kids in America. Cody, was there a reason for that one?
Because you were talking about kids.
Was I? Oh, that's true. I was, but then I was talking about Roger being creepy and laying down next to him.
Wasn't creepy.
You're suggesting that I lay down with kindergarten.
But I did goofy things with the students like that.
Yeah, but see, you were in high school where they could kind of explain themselves. Yeah. I'm with five-year-olds who barely know how to say their name. So,
and they would tell on everything
Say, well, they would say things that weren't accurate,
right.
I would imagine.
Fake news.
Kindergartners are the, you know what? The entire media is run by kindergarten kids. It is all fake news.
Mm-hmm.
There are no purple elephants. Your dad didn't take you to a water park every day. Come on. Fake news. Fake news.
You didn't walk to school in 10 feet of snow.
No, these kids don't walk to school. Some of them do. Some of them take the bus. Some of them get dropped off. I don't know. I just know we're halfway done. Halfway done with summer school. Getting good at anchor charts. Did you ever have to do anchor charts when you were in teacher, Roger? Probably not.
Nah.
What are you teaching, cartography to five-year-olds?
You got to make these charts. They're called anchor charts, and you hang them all around the room as a constant reminder of things that you're teaching them.
Naval battles?
No, we had to put those up, but we didn't call them that.
Well, that's what they call them nowadays. Okay. I call them, posters or whatever. So, no, I have this big, Post-it, the little square Post-it notes.
Mm-hmm.
They make big easel-sized posts.
Yeah.
It's the greatest.
They're awesome.
Yeah. So, every day we do a couple letters from the alphabet. So, like, we did A. So I write a big A, and then a lowercase a and an uppercase A, and then we watch this video about A, and then we go through, and the kids have to give me all sorts of words that start with A, and we write them all on this chart. And then we hang all our charts around the room so that they can say, hey, sounds like apple. Oh, look, all the words that he, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's working. You got to assume it's working, right?
You got to believe.
As a teacher, you got to believe you're getting through
on
some level, right?
Yeah.
All right.
And if not that day, then eventually.
I did have a breakthrough, though.
Ooh.
This was I took this as my win for the week. So I left Thursday very happy. One of the kids struggles. He's a real sweet kid. He struggles. And so I had the kids doing simple math. We're just trying to get some simple addition going.
Okay.
Count to 100 in simple addition. That's the math for summer school. And, they were these simple worksheets, and I had most of the kids were doing fine on them. Some were, some doing better than others. That's fine. And this poor kid was having a lot of trouble. So I had everybody else working, and I sat down with him, and I'm like, all right, let's go through this and see. And he wrote an answer, and it was a 5, but he wrote it backwards. And I was like, let's look at this 5. Do you think this is how it's supposed to go? He's like, oh, no. And I said, all right, so we do it this way. We come down, we make the hoop. You know how you teach a 5.
Mm-hmm.
No big deal. Everybody who has kids knows how to teach a 5. So I do this, and then another kid comes up and asks me a question, so I'm talking to him. And I turn back, and the kid's like, hey, Mr. Noonan, look, I wrote it. And he had written a 5, and then he had written it 2 more times in the correct places for the correct answer. And he was so excited. He was so proud of himself. And he was like, when my grandma comes to pick me up, will you tell her I wrote a good 5?
Oh, man.
I was like, yeah, of course I will. So his grandma came, and I told another teacher we were out doing reading buddies.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I say, it sounds silly, but it's not.
No, it's not.
So we had one kindergarten class reading to my kindergarten class. And I told the other teacher who I know, I said, I told her what happened. So she called him over. She's like, hey, I heard you have some pretty big news. Mr. Noonan told me you wrote something. I wrote a 5. And so she made a big deal out of it. Then his grandma came, and I said, don't you want me to say something to your grandma? He's like, yeah. So I said, okay, come here a minute. And I told her, this kid couldn't have been more proud of himself.
Yeah.
So that was my big win for the week.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well. You know this better than a lot of people, Roger. Yeah. You take it where you can get it, You go, okay. If that's it, that's good. I'm not teaching quantum physics.
No.
I still can't get Cody to do the whiteboard on time, but I got this kid to write a 5 correctly.
Yeah.
So,
And I'll tell you this.
I'm like Mr. Chips.
I've been out now 3 years. Is it 3 years? And I taught for 20. And I'm still getting notes from former students, some of them that made me not want to come back sometimes at the end of the day.
I know those
and
kids.
And that I had to do unique approaches with them to get them involved at times.
Yeah.
And they are still sending me notes about the impact that I had on their lives.
Wow.
And how they now are so dealing with time, something they didn't deal with in high school, but they have a better understanding and appreciation for time now.
Right.
And money and learning. And yet, if you had known them back in high school, you would have maybe said, wow, where's this kid going?
Yeah, it's rough. And like I said, you understand this because you're a teacher. And I'm not even, you know, a full-time certified teacher.
Yeah, but you've been doing this fairly regularly for several years.
And I taught summer school last year and stuff.
Okay.
So it's, but, you know, it gives you more appreciation for your own teachers. It gives you appreciation for what they go through, especially teachers who are not in the greatest districts with kids who are, you know, being really worked with at home. Because there's a lot of, there's a lot of people, unfortunately, who don't work with their kids at home.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of kids, because of, you know, the roulette wheel of fate, who are dealt a hand that is not their fault, it's not their parents' fault, and it's just, it's a rough hand to play. And you see it at 5, and you know it's not going to get a whole lot better at 10 and at 15 and at 20.
Yeah.
And you just do whatever you can. Somebody just texted in, my dad was a teacher and a principal, and just texted in a very nice note about my dad.
Wow.
And, yeah,
see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess you do make a difference. I don't know. I don't.
You don't see
it
at that time, but later on, once they're able to see where they've come from and what they're doing now and what do they attribute it to, you know? And so it's,
well, if this kid is ever president and he traces it back to the day Mr. Noonan taught him to draw a 5,
bam,
I'll be dead by then. But you know, it might, you know, if it is speech somewhere, you know. If he's able to write a 5 at the end of summer school, I'm going to be happy.
Because
he'll have remembered.
Yeah.
You know, because half of them can't remember my name. And it's written on the board every day. So, whatever. All right. Listen, I knew you'd appreciate that story, Roger. And I know anybody with kids or anybody who's in education would appreciate that story. But let's get down to serious business. Lots been going on this week. A lot of news coming out of Washington, a lot of news coming out of the city, a lot of news coming out of Springfield. But the biggest news perhaps came out of the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council. We are going to talk about the great debate. Is a hot dog a sandwich? We'll do that on the other side of the news, which comes up after this on WGN. Here's an update. You remember last week on the big show, I got ordained as a minister so I could perform officiate Cody's wedding. All my accoutrements have arrived. I have my certificate. I have my parking pass. I have my minister bumper sticker. I've got it all ready to go.
You have the shirt with the collar, thing?
I did not buy my... Well, see, because, no, that's more priestly. I did tell Debbie, though, that... I did tell her that now that I'm a minister, I'm going to pay the extra to get upgraded to, like, a doctorate of some... They have doctorates and stuff.
What?
I could get a much higher calling than just being a minister.
Oh.
Then you could charge more.
Well, sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you think, no, you don't get the doctor of physiology or whatever. I forget what it's called.
Philosophy.
No, it wasn't philosophy. It was something else, something crazy. But I could do that. I could upgrade. I mean, right now, I'm still legal to marry you. We're good. But maybe you'd like something a little more elaborate.
Yeah.
So we'll see what we can do. If I could up my stature in the universal
life. Did you
get
a nice frame for the certificate? Yet or?
I have not yet.
Okay.
I have not yet. I was, it just came yesterday, and I was busy on the smoker yesterday, because I have begun, once again, smoking meat. And if you are a barbecue aficionado, and I see many Facebook posts of people who are I'm not talking about grilling. I'm talking about smoking meat, barbecuing. Then you know it can be a long endeavor. Like yesterday, it was a 5.5 hours for my ribs. But, ooh, man.
They were good.
It turned out good.
What was the coating you had on, though?
It's not a secret. It's Magic Dust, it's called. Mike Mills, who was in town last week for the big Chicago Smoke-Off. You know, they have that the big festival with the country music and the barbecue.
Yeah.
He is the owner of 17th Street Barbecue in Murfreesboro, Illinois. And he His first book, Peace, Love, and Barbecue, is what I refer to as my barbecue Bible. I read it all the time. I use it for recipes. There's great stories in there. And he has a new book out, Praise the Lard. but his magic dust is what I used as a rub on the ribs yesterday.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. Oh, man. It's fun, but it's one of those things.
It's worth it.
It is worth it, and that's why, you know, it's nice to have a couple Saturdays off where I can indulge myself in a hobby. And everybody knows you got to have time to hobby. But I do like to grill. I'll throw a hot dog on a grill every once in a while. How'd you like that segue, Cody?
Nice transition, Brian. Thank you, Cody.
So this has been a big thing because, you know, July is hot dog month. Mm-hmm. July is National Hot Dog Month. Everybody, who doesn't love a hot dog? What American does not like a hot dog? Now, we're not going to get into the debate about Heinz and their hot dog sauce because I think that's an affront against God and man and all.
And it's been done already.
And it's been done, and everybody talks about ketchup on hot dogs. Do I like ketchup on a hot dog? Absolutely not. Do I begrudge you if you want to put ketchup on a hot dog? Absolutely not. You know why? Because it's America. Put whatever you want on your hot dog. I don't care. But don't put ketchup on my hot dog. That's all I'm saying. No big deal. You know, whatever you want to do. And don't call ketchup dog sauce. We know what it is. Most of us are not that stupid. Some of us probably are. And thought, look at this. Heinz has created a brand new condiment. And it's hot dog sauce. Anything called dog sauce, I'm going to think you wrung out a wet dog and bottled it. I'm not putting anything called dog sauce on any sort of food. But that's not why you called. You called about this. The big debate. The classic debate.
Mm-hmm.
Is a hot dog a sandwich? Ooh. Now, we'll go around the horn.
Okay.
I say absolutely not. A hot dog is a hot dog. If it's on a bun, it's not a sandwich. And don't come at me with an Italian beef is on bread and that's a sandwich. It's on bread. It's not really on a bun. You know what I mean? Hamburger, not a sandwich. On a bun. Different. That's my hot take on this. Hot dog is not a sandwich. But that's why it's America. You can have your own opinion. Cody? Hot dog, sandwich, or not?
Hot dog's not a sandwich.
Hot dog, not a sandwich.
It doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. Thank you, Cody. Roger's going to disagree. I heard the guttural moan, like he was in pain, like somebody had stepped on his hot dog and left it there, kicked it down the street. Yes, Roger, hot dog, sandwich, or no?
Sandwich.
Really?
Yep.
It is a sandwich. Why would you say that?
Because, to take your argument, a bun is bread, it is bread.
Now, two slices of bread.
Yes, it is. You slice it open. There's a top and a bottom.
No,
depending on where
a hot dog bun.
Yes.
Is your hot dog bun in two separate pieces?
Is your hot dog bun in two separate pieces? When I put the hot dog in, it falls apart. Yes, I got two separate pieces.
Then you buy cheap hot dog buns.
No.
Don't yell at me.
Bread is not a requirement for a sandwich. Remember the KFC Double Down?
What's the KFC?
Oh, is that the chicken within a chicken?
Yeah, it's chicken within chicken.
Chicken's a bun.
That's a sandwich. Two separate pieces of a
sandwiches
thing make
two,
a sandwich.
Well, then a bun, a bun.
There's a top and a bottom in a bun, and there's something in between, which is a hot dog.
There's not a bottom and a hot dog.
Yes, there
is. A hot dog bun is just...
If you turn it one way, the bottom is the top. If you turn it back the other way, the top is the top.
All right. Young lady taking a picture. How you doing, kid?
And here's how we made hot dogs on Sunday afternoons in the Battish household.
Well, sure, and I know what
you're
going to say.
Wait a minute, because we didn't have buns.
Right.
We had a loaf of bread, two slices of bread. You take the hot dog, you slice it down the middle, you grill it on both sides, you slap it on the bread and a little ketchup, and that's a sandwich.
All right, well, I'm going to disagree. And back in the day, when I was a child, I would put a hot dog on a fork, much to my mother's consternation, and grill it over the burner on the stove. And then, well, you sure the grease only went so far. You're going to start a fire! Really? I'm just making a hot dog. It's like a campfire, Ma. You're going to start a fire. Grease is everything. The stove is unbelievably dirty. Yeah, whatever. If I ever see you do that again. Yeah. And then we would take.
It's a miracle you made it this far.
Listen, if we didn't burn the house down, my brothers and I, nobody's burning a house down. If we made it through and we didn't burn the house down and you burn your house down, you're doing something wrong. Because there's absolutely no reason. So anyway, but I would campfire my hot dog over the stove because that's the best way. And then if we didn't have buns, I would take a piece of Wonder Bread, just one piece though, and put the hot dog in there and fold it over. But that wasn't a sandwich. That didn't make it a sandwich. That just made me, you know, doing what I had to do. That made me a survivalist.
Well, when you folded it over, was there a top part and a bottom part?
No, it was like a taco. It was like a hot dog taco in Wonder Bread. All right, well, here, listen. We can.
Is a taco a sandwich?
No, a taco is a taco.
Okay.
What, are you out of your mind?
No, I'm just asking. You said like a taco.
Right, to show you for a visual that you would realize that the bread, there was not a top and a bottom.
But you still use bread, and it's still a sandwich.
It's not a sandwich. Yeah, well, you know what? Yeah. You can argue all you want, but the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council weighed in on this.
Who are they?
Well, they're the definitive voice of the encased meat industry, I would say. That's what I would call them.
You're bringing out the big guns, then.
Listen. I could argue with you all day, mm-hmm. and we'd just go around in circles. Right. Cody, very quiet about this. I think any time I bring up a divisive issue, mm-hmm. whether it's hot dogs or the presidency, Cody clams up. He doesn't want to be part of any controversial hot takes.
I took my stance, and it was, I'm right, so I don't need to say anything else.
Ooh.
Hot dog's not a sandwich.
There you go.
Yeah,
according to the council, here it is. This is the final word. I don't want any more. The foot has spoken, as Homer Simpson once said.
I already spoke.
Well, listen, according to the council, our verdict is ... Pause for dramatic effect. If we had a drum roll, we'd play it now, but we don't. Our verdict is a hot dog is an exclamation of joy, a food, a verb describing one showing off, and even an emoji. It is truly a category unto its own. Limiting the hot dog's significance by saying it's just a sandwich is like calling the Dalai Lama just a guy. Perhaps at one time its importance could be limited by forcing it into a larger sandwich category. No disrespect to Rubens and others. But that time has passed, according to the NHDSC president and quote-unquote Queen of Ween. That's a direct quote, her title. That's on her business card. Janet Riley. She said in a release, we therefore choose to take a cue from a great performer and declare our namesake to be hot dog formerly known as a sandwich.
Ooh.
So the hot dog is not a sandwich anymore.
When were they ever known as a sandwich?
Never.
Then why are they formally known as that?
Well, because some people did say this. The in Louisville, Kentucky, and who doesn't love news coming out of Louisville, Kentucky, just to say Louisville, the Courier-Journal published an apology because they had said in the past that a hot dog was a sandwich. So they said, on the following dates, the Courier-Journal incorrectly referred to hot dogs as sandwiches. October 2nd, 1887. August 10th, 1901. March 20th, 1904.
What?
July 21st, 1935. January 14th, 1939. May 4th, 1941. September 15th, 1950. June 29th, 1958. November 16th, 1961. And August 4th, 1966. Among these errors were references to a Frankfurter sausage sandwich, Frankfurter sandwich, Coney Island sandwich, Frankfurter sandwich with mustard, and most egregious, a Frankfurter sandwich with ketchup. We deeply regret the errors, especially that last one. So a formal apology from the Louisville Courier-Journal for calling a hot dog a sandwich. So there you have it, folks. There can be no more debate. Rogers top and bottom is crazy, and plus, if I have a hot dog and the bun falls apart, I am furious. If a hot dog bun doesn't hold together, it's an inferior bun, and I've had plenty of inferior buns in my time.
Yeah.
I've got a question re the ketchup comment from that apology. It two Chicagoans, a Chicago-style hot dog has no ketchup, but are no hot dogs anywhere ever allowed to have ketchup?
Perhaps,
is the affront?
Perhaps Louisville has the same mentality as Chicago. Perhaps Louisville believes that there should also not be hot dogs. Right now it's somebody from Louisville. It's a publisher from the Courier-Journal.
Yeah.
Saying I was forced at gunpoint to do this. We have let's see. Brian, have you ever had an Italian beef where the bun was split but not all the way through and then served to you with the open side up? Isn't that how all beefs are? And beef is on beef. Boy, I know I took my stand. I don't consider beef being on a bun.
It's a roll.
It's not really. Sometimes it's just a piece of bread. Most places they're just cutting pieces off
face?
The loaf.
Yeah,
No. Not open face. They're taking a long loaf of bread and cutting it into portions. So you're not. While it's not a bun, it's it's bread, but it's not slices of bread. You know what I mean? It's a hard thing.
So once in a while, when I was little, we'd run out of hot dog buns, but we would have bread. So my mom would bake the hot dogs, cut them in half, put them on the bread. I would call that a hot dog sandwich.
Because it was on bread. Because it was on bread, right.
Right, not a hot dog.
Hot dog's
not
a bun.
A hot dog bun is bread.
No, it's made of bread, but it's not bread. No. It's a bun. It's a bun. We are going to split hairs here.
I'm having a conniption fan.
Maybe you need to lay down with some five-year-olds. Maybe that would be the best way for you to solve it. You're going to read a book? That's what's going to happen? All right, read a book and think about where you might want to take your lovely wife, because I have a list of the best dating sites in Chicago. We love fun lists, and we love to argue these crazy dating sites who come up with the definitive list of where to take people for various things. And if you want to weigh in on this, we're getting a lot of people weighing in on the text, the great hot dog debate. My sister and I had an argument over this. She said it's a snack. I say it's a sandwich. It's meat and it's bread. It's a meal. I can see, and I have hot dogs for dinner sometimes. I have a hot dog for lunch. I don't know if it's a full meal. I guess it can be.
Well, it depends how many you have.
A hot dog?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I go across the street to 7-Eleven, grab a hot dog all the time.
Just for lunch or for dinner?
Just if I'm in a pinch.
It's a meal in itself sometimes, depending on what you put on.
I like a nice hot dog. Yeah. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't care. It's not a sandwich, but I'll still eat a beautiful hot dog.
Do you like chili dogs?
Do I like chili dogs?
Because I am obsessed with chili dogs.
Are you really?
I'll eat a chili dog any day of the week.
Is that right?
Love chili dogs.
I enjoy chili dogs to a certain extent. I was a big fan, and people from certain parts of Michigan will know what this is, a Coney. Mm-hmm. And people will confuse a Coney with a chili dog, not the same. A Coney has a dried meat on top of it. Coney, even though it's called Coney sausage, dry. And it's those are very, very good.
Now, is that the same as a Coney Island?
Well, it depends on what part of Michigan you're in.
Oh, okay.
Yes, in certain parts of Michigan, that is a Coney Island. In the Detroit area, Coney Island is more like a chili dog.
Because when I worked at Dairy Queen...
How frightening is it that this is where my expertise lies? That I can speak definitively on the geography of hot dogs, and yet other things I'm completely baffled by. I don't know. So when you worked in Detroit, what, you ate a hot dog?
No. At Dairy Queen? At Dairy Queen, we served hot dogs back then, and every so often someone would come up and say, give me a Coney Island.
And they'd want chili on it.
And they'd want the chili on it, right.
See, so again, depending... If you're in Detroit and you say Coney Island, you're going to get basically a chili dog. If you're in the Flint area and you say you want a Coney, it's coming with this dried meat on top of it.
Mm.
Yeah, very odd. Very odd indeed. All right, let's take a quick break, put our heads down, and just relax here on WGN. A couple texts quickly about our last debate. For it to be a sandwich, you need two slices of bread. That from the 224. From the 773, agree with you on hot dogs not being a sandwich, but a Sloppy Joe sandwich is a sandwich, even though it's usually on a hamburger bun.
What?
How does that back you? You
He's saying a bun is not sandwich bread, and therefore a hot dog can't be a sandwich. But it's a Sloppy Joe sandwich.
That's what this texter says.
Bun. Right. That supports my hot dog thing.
No, it does not. No, because the texter agreed with me about the hot dog.
Bun.
No.
Bun.
No. Two different things. Go ahead, Cody.
They're different. Because they're not connected,
they're
like
different.
I'm saying.
When I was 16, I worked at Sonic in the southern region of the U.S. They had a foot-long Coney dog like the one you described. It was awesome. And, yes, we had roller skating car hops. Very nice. I would like that. Roller skating car hops, also not a sandwich. Good band name, though. Roller skating car hops. I think they're playing Cody's wedding.
Really?
Somebody texted in what I was looking for. A doctor of divinity. That's the next level, Cody. I could be a doctor of divinity. But if I get the doctorate in divinity, you all have to call me doctor. There's absolutely no question about it. I want all the promos here recut. I want everything changed. I will demand to be called doctor. Dr. Detroit. That's right. All right. Okay. Let's see. Okay. Cupid. OkCupid lists Chicago's best date spots. Do you still take your lady on dates, Cody, even though you are engaged?
No, why would I do? Why would I keep trying?
Exactly right. Sure. Well, yeah, once you got them, you don't have to. Right now, every woman hates us now.
I literally took her out last night.
Yes.
And I think the night before, actually. Well,
really?
Maybe she took me out. Doesn't matter. We went out.
You went out somewhere nice. You had a good time. You socialized.
We did.
You took
All
in
of
the
those.
City.
In that order.
You went out, you had a nice time, and you socialized.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. That's how it should be. If you'd like to save a pretty penny but still treat your date nice, they say to go to 90 Miles Cuban Cafe in Logan Square. You ever been there?
No.
I've driven past it a bunch. I like Cuban food. That'd be fun. Keep it casual, but without bros around to kill the vibe, head to Small Bar, which was voted the best no-bro sports bar. Bros will ruin everything. You know, the bros with the backwards hat. Or the sunglasses on the back of their heads.
Yeah.
Guys who are still in their fraternity in their 40s. And not like active in the
alumni
on the board.
Association.
Right. Not like that, but still think they're actually in their fraternity
right.
house. You know, I know a lot of people stay active in their fraternities for the rest of their lives, and that those aren't the people I'm talking about. That's all I need. The best classic local spot, the Green Door Tavern. They say if you want competition, go to Imperium Arcade Bar. I've never
Emporium.
Emporium? Emporium, you're right. You've been there. There was one we walked by, one on Lincoln,
yeah,
or on Milwaukee.
Headquarters or Replay are, in my opinion, better. Emporium, you got to pay for the games.
Oh, really?
If you go to Replay up in Lincoln Park or Headquarters downtown, they're free.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Emporium's in Wicker Park, so it's the hip place to be.
Hip place to go. All the kids love it.
But no, I'm cheap. No, Replay, go up to Replay. You can play Frogger and pinball machines for an hour. You don't even have to buy a drink. Walk in, walk out. Never cover. They usually have a live DJ on Fridays and Saturdays, too. I should be getting paid for this.
Well, you should.
But I'm not.
And people should buy a drink.
Replay is the best date spot, though, seriously.
There you go. Okay, so Cody disagrees with OkCupid. That's fine. Nerdy pickup spot, Whirly Ball. Ever been there? I was there once.
I've been once.
I don't know if it would be... See, to me, that's a place that people go in groups.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think it would be very hard to, you know, cut somebody out of the herd unless you run into them with your Whirly Ball car.
But they do have a bar, though.
Yeah.
So
people
maybe
go there just to drink?
Maybe.
Don't they go to Whirly Ball?
Oh.
I don't know. Let's see. If you're trying to keep it sultry, who doesn't? Or just have a very specific desire for how your date should end, they say go to Violet Hour. It was voted the best spot to, quote, get the sex started.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how they worded it, too. Through the in front of there. You got to get the sex started.
You're also going to pay for it, too, because that's not a cheap place.
No.
Worth it, but not cheap.
Slippery Slope on Milwaukee, the name would suggest, was voted as having the best bathrooms for, you know.
What?
For mingling.
Is that allowed?
I don't think it's allowed. I'm just somehow on OkCupid. There must be a lot of... First of all, I'm going to judge you if you do that in a bathroom, in a public bathroom. I will judge you, and it will not be a favorable judgment, let's just say. I understand the heat of passion. I understand lustiness on many levels. I also understand how disgusting public bathrooms are. If you want a night worthy of social media, this is you, Cody. This is you written all over it, the Three Arts Club Cafe. And for the most Instagrammable date spot, go to the Map Room. That's what they say.
The most Instagram... Why are you on a date if you're only concerned about Instagramming? People are terrible.
Are you new?
People are the worst.
Of course people are the worst.
This is why
2017.
This is why people need things like OkCupid to try and find other...
superficial people who are going to go out on a date just so they can Instagram it. It's all part of their brand. Cody, you got to keep your brand up. You know that.
Devoid of personality or anything interesting
your
to say.
Your lifestyle and fashion brand. You must keep it up.
I'm embarrassed for those people.
Are you embarrassed for humanity?
Mm-hmm.
I weep for the future on a regular basis. I weep for the future. But I do it while I'm at the most Instagrammable date spot available.
God.
All right. We are going to meet with a mentalist, Jonathan Pritchard, on the other side of the news. It should be very, very exciting. Stick around. Let's do this. Then it's news time. We're going to be amazed because I welcome into the studio Jonathan Pritchard. He is a mentalist. You may have seen him perform under his nom de stage, Johnny Zavant. He is a mentalist, as I said. He's a mind reader. And he's also a speaker and a corporate trainer, which is fascinating. Welcome. We're glad you're here. Nice
to
meet you.
Thank you.
Jonathan, Johnny, what do you prefer?
Whatever is on the check is
Mr.
fine
Pritchard?
By me.
Mr. Pritchard, how does it go?
Yes. Sir Honor of the Pritchard, yes.
So, first of all, for people who might be confused by the title, what exactly is a mentalist?
A mentalist, shorthand, is a mind reader.
Okay.
But basically, I use applied psychology to make it look like I can read minds, but I'm not actually psychic.
Okay.
It's like I'm like a mind reader.
Right, which is your website, likeamindreader.com.
How about that?
That
very
works,
clever.
That works out perfectly, doesn't it? So is it? Did you study psychology? How did you come to be a mentalist? Is it something that's a natural gift, or is it something that you learn over time and perfect?
Something in kind of my line of work we love to say is a five-year-old could do everything I do with 25 years of practice.
Okay.
It's not a talent. It's not a gift. It's just skill. It's something that you work at over the years. And this is just something I've been doing since I was 5 years old, basically.
But there is a trick to it because, you know, if you're sitting in an audience or we're watching you, or I mentioned that I saw a mentalist not too long ago, and it was astonishing. There was in my rational mind, and I may not be the smartest guy in the room, but I a lot doesn't get by me. I couldn't figure out how he did some of these things for the life of me.
Exactly, and that's a really good point, is the smarter you are, the more amazing it is.
Okay. Why? Because you realize that it shouldn't be happening, or?
Exactly. Because the mentalist creates a context through the performance for you to make logical assumptions.
Okay.
About what's actually happening and what's not happening. And then he later shows that your assumptions about what's true isn't true. That's how the magical effect comes to be, right?
All right.
So if you don't trust your logical faculties, or you're missing your logical faculties, the magic effect is lost.
Right.
So magicians do tricks with objects and things. Right. Mentalists mainly do tricks with information.
Now, is it the same kind of thing, and I'm not trying to put you in this box, but like fortune tellers or some of these faith healers, that is it the same sort of principle where they're reading either physical signs or information, some sort of information, whether it's verbal or physical, that it's all kind of the same thing, just, you know, you're in an entertainment realm and people know what they're getting, and other people are using it for, your powers are used for evil.
Exactly. And the main difference is when the show's over, I'll tell you, no, it was all tricks.
Okay.
It was all information management. It was for fun. The difference is the tarot card readers and the faith healers, right, they're taking money under false pretenses, saying, I can do this thing without actually being able to do it.
Now, and I'm not going to ask you to give away anything, obviously, but it seems, I hear you say that it's all based on information. And I see, like you've asked me, we're going to do something later. You asked me to look at a card and remember it. I haven't really given you any information other than what we're, you know, the information that we're exchanging as we're having this conversation. So is it, what kind of information are you looking for from someone who comes up on stage with you when you're at, you know, because you're going to be at the Chicago Magic Lounge, which is, if people don't know that, that's 4707 North Broadway in Chicago. And every Thursday and Saturday they have shows up there. You're going to be there on July 29th. So people will be able to see you do this in person. What kind of information when somebody comes up on stage with you are you looking for?
There is a lot going on. I mean, that's what a lot of the practice comes from.
Okay.
Is when you're in a speaking role or you're on stage and you have an audience that you're looking at, there are definitely personality types that come through.
Okay.
Now, the guy sitting in the back with his arms folded, you're not going to read my mind, Mr. Mind Reader Man, right?
Right.
He may not be the most helpful volunteer on stage.
Okay.
Or the person leaning forward, smiling, or too eager to volunteer.
Yeah.
You know, well, they're going to try to have too much fun on stage and make it their show.
Right.
But they don't know how to manage the experience for 300 people in that room.
Right.
So you, as the person running the show, can't pick somebody like that.
Okay.
Right. Because then it ruins the experience for everybody else.
Right.
So the body language really informs who you bring up on stage and
okay.
who you choose to work with. There are some things about reading body cues and eye twitches and where they're looking, but it doesn't account for a lot of what happens. So that's as much as I can
okay.
really
yeah,
say.
Yeah, no,
otherwise,
I understand.
It's kind of like saying it wouldn't be a good trick if you knew how it worked.
Sure. Now, is this something that you... Are there classes for this? Did you study under someone where you were like someone's apprentice, like Mickey Mouse and the Sorcerer?
I was, actually.
Were you really?
Yeah, I grew up weird, kind of doing magic tricks.
All right.
When I was 13, I was juggling fire. When I was 15, I was hammering nails up my nose.
Oh, man.
I had wonderful parents.
Wow.
I was under the supervision of professionals.
Okay.
It's just professionals that had retired to the mountains of North Carolina where I grew up.
Ah.
And we met at an after-school program. He was the guy running the show. And I was like, that's fun. Can you teach me how to do that? He's like, sure, why not?
Wow.
But I had to wait until I was 18 to learn how to eat fire.
Yeah, well, I would say that's probably best. You don't
that
want minors eating
somewhere.
How old to put the nail up your nose? Is that 14? They don't care about that in North Carolina?
Not too much. Not too much.
Very nice. Jonathan Pritchard is with me. You can catch him at the Chicago Magic Lounge on July 29th, 4707 North Broadway. You can also go to his website because I think this is fascinating. We're going to talk a little bit more about the entertainment portion, but then I want to go into how you've created a company that goes in and talks to companies, how anybody can think like a mind reader, negotiate like a mind reader. The website is likeamindreader.com. We'll have more with Jonathan in just a minute here on 720 WGN. Jonathan Pritchard is my guest. He is a mentalist. He is also a corporate trainer and speaker. You can see him at the Chicago Magic Lounge, chicagomagiclounge.com. He'll be there July 29th. His website, likeamindreader.com. You can find out about his entertainment stuff as well as his corporate training and speaking. Let's go back a little bit to your a question from a texter first.
Okay.
They want to know, is it harder to read someone, say, who's an actor, someone who gets paid to kind of lie for a living? You know, they create personas all the time, so is it harder to read one type of person than another? You mentioned body language and stuff, but something like that?
Yes, actors are also professional liars,
right,
just like I am.
Yes.
So it can be more difficult to read them, but they also have a sense of playfulness, so they understand what it takes to put on a good show. So a lot of times, that can actually be a lot of fun for me, because it's one, challenging, and also two, a lot of fun, and then the audience kind of joins in. Oh, he's in trouble. Let's see how he gets out of this.
They do like, the audiences do like to see whether it's a magician or a mentalist or any type of performer of that type struggle a little bit. And that's part of the act too. That's part of the show.
It's like juggling and then dropping on the big trick,
yes,
the first two times.
Right.
And then I hope, and then everybody's rooting for you.
Right.
Then when you do it, the place goes crazy. But if you nail it the first time out, they go, I guess he's a really good juggler.
Yeah. Pretty impressive, but I want to see a guy overcome something.
Exactly.
All right, so you mentioned you were in North Carolina as a child, and at some young, impressionable age, you run into some, I don't know, retired carnies, and you're putting nails up your door. Were they actually carnies? Who did you meet? And then, because it got more interesting / bizarre as you grew up.
Welcome to my life.
Yes.
That's going to be on my tombstone. It got more interesting / bizarre. Yeah, my first mentor, Randall, taught me how to juggle fire and hammer nails at my nose, that kind of fun stuff.
What were your parents saying when you'd come home? Did you tell them? Because I would imagine at some point they're going to go, how come all your clothes are singed?
Well, they they were all in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I actually learned how to juggle from my dad, like juggling tennis balls.
Yeah.
And then that was a couple months before the after-school program.
Okay.
And then I could juggle, and then Randall goes, hey, you want to learn how to juggle pins? Sure. You juggle pins. Hey, you want to set those on fire? Sure.
Of course
do.
I do.
Yeah. So it's
why wouldn't I?
Exactly. So it's a more logical progression than you might think, but it still is fire.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is, you grab the wrong end, you let go.
Right. You learn quick, right? It's like touching a stove. You do it once, you're
exactly.
never going to do it again.
Exactly.
Can you still juggle? Do you still do all that kind of stuff?
I do, and that's why I've got a tattoo of all the things I juggle.
Bats? You juggle bats?
Yeah.
You've got the pins, the clubs, the machetes,
related.
the fire, and the baton,
yeah,
or the pin. Then, but you don't juggle bats.
No. All right. No, that's a whole other story.
I didn't know what went on.
Yeah.
All right, so now you're going through this after-school program with Randall. You're learning these kind of illusions.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to college.
Yes.
And this is where things even get another level of interesting.
I'm in college, and there's a guy that comes to do a lecture at my school. His name is James Randi.
Mm-hmm.
And Randi is a legend in the magic world.
Yes, so the amazing Randi.
James, the amazing Randi. He was on the Carson show 34 times. He was on the Happy Days show, hung upside down from a helicopter up to escape from a straitjacket. He was coming to campus. So I wound up cutting school for the next 2 days to just hang out with him.
Oh, cool.
And then we got along really well. And then I thought, you know what? Let me just ask him. Hey, Randy, do you need any help at your foundation over the summers? I'm sure I could set something up. He goes, yeah, you're hired. And that's
Perfect.
How I started working with James Randi.
Now, does he still have, he had the $1 million challenge.
He had the $1 million challenge for a very long time.
Forever.
He just retired from kind of public life. He still does some speaking engagements.
Okay.
But the
Refresh us, what was the $1 million challenge?
So the $1 million challenge was $1 million in the bank for anybody who claimed to be able to do anything supernatural, like talk to dead people or predict the future, anything fun like that. So I was the guy handling applications and designing testing protocol for those applicants.
Oh, wow.
So
you got to see everybody's scam came across your desk.
Absolutely. And then Randi, he knows everything. And then he would go, oh, that's what this one is. That's what this scam is. Here's how they do that. And that was my master's education in lying to people.
Wow. Very cool. And then you started entertaining. Now I want to get you, cause you've been on, people may recognize you. You've been on America's Got Talent. You've been in Vegas and all the big rooms. You do private shows, corporate events, worked at Disney and Universal. You've been around. You've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
Let's see. We've got, how long is the thing that you set up with me where I looked at the card?
Gotcha.
Did that take a while? Because we're gonna after the news, we're gonna stick around. So we could either do it now, we could do it after the news.
Gotcha.
Because we've got a lot to talk about still.
All right.
And if people have questions, 312-981-7200. If they want to talk to you, Jonathan. Would you rather do it now? Or would you rather wait a couple minutes?
It's a multi-step process. All right, we got a big payoff.
Let's wait and do. We'll do that after the news. So now you're entertaining and you're doing mentalist shows. And are you working in magic clubs? Where do you do these? Where did you start doing your own just entertainment type shows?
When I went out on my own, I was basically working at colleges and universities.
Oh, okay. That's a good market.
Yeah, like vaudeville never went away. It just went to colleges.
Yeah.
It's how Steve Martin got his start. All sorts of people you've heard about got their start performing at colleges.
Right.
So I would tour around doing shows for college kids.
Nice.
And it was a lot of fun.
Are college kids a good audience, or are they rough because they're, you know, very politically correct and skeptical and, you know?
Right. They are one of my favorite audiences.
Oh, nice.
Mainly because if you come in and you're smug and your whole show is designed to make you look good, they can smell that from a mile away.
Yeah.
And they're going to eat you alive.
Okay.
But if you come there ready to have fun and just kind of facilitate them doing amazing things, they're going to love you forever.
Make them the star so that when you leave, they can talk to their friends tomorrow. Did you see me? I was there.
Exactly.
And they'll be talking about it for weeks. So that's going along, and that's a good gig. You're working colleges, you're working campuses, but then you decide to make the jump. And this is what I think is fascinating. You start doing programs for corporations. You start trying to train companies to think, negotiate, whatever it is, like a mind reader. So
right.
How does that evolve, and what's the basis when you go in to talk to, let's say you were coming to WG and you were going to talk to the sales department.
Right.
Right. So how does that work?
So how I got into it was doing those college shows, people would hang out afterwards and go, I can't even imagine living your life. You're touring around the world, getting to have fun. And then it hit me. They literally couldn't imagine living my life.
Right.
Because it's so far outside the normal experience. So I started talking to people after the shows, and I got more excited to talk to people after the show than I was to do the show itself.
Okay.
Those were my first coaching clients.
Ah, makes sense.
Years later, I start getting emails from those people saying, I am so glad we had that hour-long talk. It completely messed with my head, and I'm on a totally new, awesome path. Thank you so much.
We'll get more into that and how we can all try to think a little more like a mind reader. Jonathan Pritchard is here. You've seen him on America's Got Talent. You see him all over. You can see him on July 29th at Chicago Magic Lounge, which is at 4707 North Broadway, chicagomagiclounge.com. Jonathan's website is likeamindreader.com. We'll have more with Jonathan on the other side of the news. We'll do the news right after this, WGN. He's a consultant for Chris Angel. He's been all over, worked for Disney and Universal Studios. He's going to be at the Chicago Magic Lounge on July 29th, chicagomagiclounge.com. So we were talking real quick, and I want to just finish this up a little bit before we get into the trick. And again, 312-981-7200 if you want to help us out. So you started doing corporate training, because you would talk to college students, and they were happy to get your advice. So now you mentioned you're going to come in here, you're going to talk to, say, our sales force. So what are you trying to do for them to maximize their ability to go out and sell?
The most powerful force in your life are your relationships.
Right.
The quality of your relationships is directly tied to your communication skills. The more effectively you can communicate, the better your relationships.
Right.
Business is just relationships with dollars.
Okay.
Right? Well, all the weird psychology I use on stage is exactly the kind of weird psychology used in negotiation, in advertising and marketing, employee retention, all that kind of fun stuff.
Okay.
So basically, I connect companies with their people, whether it's employees, clients, or soon-to-be clients. And that usually takes the shape in live events, kind of emceeing their awards banquets, or coming in to do trainings on, here's how to communicate with people. You have to see through their mind, understand how they see the world, then you can figure out what you need to say to help them understand what you're trying to communicate.
So without trying to give away your state secrets and shortchange you from all the gigs, what's the first step? What would be an easy first step for everybody to kind of progress a little bit and be able to see through somebody else's mind?
Context. It's all about context. What context is the person experiencing your message?
Okay.
Their background. What are you doing? What are you saying? What are you wearing? Where are you? What time of day? What's the medium of the message? Is this handwritten? Is it just a text? Is it an email? Are you saying it to their face? Right? Okay. Everything around the message is the message. So you've got to understand what context you're communicating inside of. Then you can craft the right message for that context.
Right. If you want to negotiate like a mind reader, sell like a mind reader, think like a mind reader, whatever, like a mind reader, likeamindreader.com is Jonathan's website. So why Johnny's Avant when you perform? What is what's the different name?
I was on tour with Brian Brushwood from internet show called Scam School. I was helping him out with that, and we were on tour together, and I was kind of learning the business of doing college shows. And we were on the road for like a year and a half together. And I thought, you know what? I want a stage name. I want to jazz this
sure,
up a little
yeah.
bit, right? And we were just tired beyond belief. Been on the road for a long time. And I was like, I want something kind of like, I'm an idiot savant, but not that direct.
Right.
And then, well, what if we just put a Z instead of the S? And then I looked it up online. Does JohnnyZavant.com exist? Right. No? Okay. Well, let's Google Zavant with a Z. Almost no results.
Perfect.
Yes.
That's it.
It was basically SEO driven, but it also...
Nothing wrong with that.
Right. It's kind of like Jonathan Pritchard. Okay. That sounds like a good corporate speaker
sure,
guy.
Yes.
But to do an amazing mind-reading show, like, yeah, Johnny Zavant. Right?
Johnny Zavant, I like it. All right, we are going to do some mind-reading now. Now, how should we tell people what the... Because you had us do two things to set this up.
Yeah, so we did two things. First, I just asked you to think of a card. You've just locked it in your mind. You didn't tell anybody. You didn't take it out of the deck
nope.
or anything like that. It's just in your mind. There's no way anybody else should know what that card is, right?
Correct. Unless you saw the reflection in my glasses.
Right, right. And in a moment, you'll see why even that wouldn't matter.
Okay.
Right? And then I put some stuff on the table, and you just made some choices.
Right.
And that left us with the phone.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
So that's totally true. You're not helping me.
No, not at all.
I didn't pay to go along.
Not at all.
Nothing like that, right?
You put a watch, a phone, and a wallet. You said, which two would you push toward me first? I said it. Which one would you pick up? I had first said the phone, and then you said, are you sure? Do you want to change your mind? And I did change my mind. I picked up the wallet, so that's how the phone was left there. So that's where we stand. And it's, you know, I don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
Because I said to Cody, what's going to happen? He said, well, you really shouldn't know what's going to happen. All right? I don't know what's going to happen. So, yes, now.
So the reason why we asked everybody to call in is we're going to send everybody on an imaginary vacation.
Ooh.
All right. So
Roger, you can play along with this as well.
Yeah,
ooh,
so
good.
So you can be one of our volunteers.
Okay.
Gotcha. So where would you want to go? Right? It could be anywhere in the universe. Where would you go?
If
you
in the
go,
universe?
Anywhere you would want to go on a mystery vacation.
I would want to go to the edge of the galaxy. I think there's a restaurant out there.
So long. Thanks for all the fish.
All right. So Roger wants to go to the end of the galaxy.
Yeah.
Do you want to find out what other people want? Is that why they're on hold?
We've got a second thing.
Oh, a second. Okay.
All right. The second thing would be, how are we going to get there?
All right. Let me, let's ask John. John.
Yep.
Welcome. All right. So you heard the fantasy vacation that Roger picked is at the edge of the galaxy. Now you tell us how we're going to get there.
Swim.
Going to swim.
All right. So you're going to swim the psychedelic oceans to the edge of the galaxy.
All right, John. Thanks. Hey, listen now for what happens next. Okay. So we're going to the edge of the galaxy. We're swimming there.
Okay. And if we're going to swim there, we're going to need lots of equipment and kind of planning ahead. It's going to cost a lot of money. So how much would a trip to the edge of the galaxy by swimming cost?
James, what do you think?
$5 million.
$5 million.
All right. $5 million. Outstanding.
All right. And those were random calls, right, Cody? That's not you doing voices. Cody doesn't do characters very well.
That would be kind of awesome if he could do that. That'd be great.
You've heard my voices. Not that good.
I wish Montesquieu had called.
That's fantastic.
Okay, so now you've got the answers.
Yes, yes.
All right.
All right, so a detail that we didn't cover yet is that as soon as I came in, I asked if it would be all right to put a clear plastic box on your desk.
Correct.
Right? And it's been on your side, mm-hmm. away from me, and I don't want to touch it from this point forward.
Okay.
Right? So that's been under your control, basically.
Yes, yeah, nobody's touched it since you set it down.
Perfect. And could you tell everybody what is inside that?
It looks like three folded up index cards. Two look like index cards. One looks like a playing card. Can I lift it up?
Yeah, you can lift it up. Kind of. Okay.
So yeah, we've got two folded index cards and one folded. It looks like half a folded playing card and two folded index cards in a clear plastic cube.
Right, and the top just lifts off. Mm-hmm. But also, check it to make sure there aren't any secret flaps. It doesn't open up anywhere that you wouldn't. I mean, it is so remarkably boring.
Yeah, there's nothing to it. It's just a plastic. It's like something you'd have on your desk to put paper clips in.
Exactly.
That's what it is.
Exactly. So that's why I had it over by you, so that way you're in control the whole time. Right. Right? And that was done before anything else was done.
Correct. That was the first thing you asked me.
So open the box and then reach out. And just take one of those papers out. You've got a 50-50 shot. Okay.
I'm already feeling really creeped out here.
Right?
And he hasn't even done anything.
So now, open it up. What does it say on it?
Phone.
And what was the object left on the table?
The phone.
Can I see that?
Yeah.
Ta-da. For posterity's sake.
All right. Wait a visual record.
Okay, Drop back in. Okay.
Now, when I just asked you to think of a playing card, mm-hmm. for the very first time, would you tell everybody what was that playing card?
The Six of Diamonds.
Okay, and it was just totally random. I didn't wink and a nudge and say, okay, just go along with it.
No, not at all.
It was random.
No, completely.
Okay, there's a folded up playing card.
I want you to go get me an exorcist right now. Cody, before I pick this card up, the dark art gets Snape in here.
Yeah.
Something. We must battle the dark arts. All right. So am I supposed to open this now?
There's a folded playing card. You're going to unfold it and tell everybody which one it is.
It's the Six of Diamonds.
Oh, Jesus.
Six of Diamonds. Cody?
Are you licensed? Seriously.
Me?
No, your guest.
Jonathan?
He's a dangerous
Johnny
weapon.
No, Johnny Savant. There's something going on.
I've not registered his hands, but
I'm very
mind.
One, I'm excited that I have a mind that's able to be read. That I have a mind at all.
Exactly. Okay. It denotes
so that's good.
High intelligence.
Is that right?
Yeah. Okay, put your hand over the box and give it a shake for luck, right? Just kind of like a bingo shake, right?
All right,
so this is the big reveal. Right. We had random people call in and give us suggestions.
Yes.
There's could have been millions of people
that
we chose from that called in, made it through. No way to control that, right?
Exactly.
Now,
and even Roger didn't know we were going to talk to him until I said on the air, Roger, you can play along.
Yeah.
Exactly. So for me, the way I experience deja vu is that I'll feel like I've dreamt it and then it happens. And of course you could say, well, I dreamt this before, and everybody goes, yeah, right. The only way to prove it is if you write it down ahead of time, fold it up, put it inside a clear plastic box, because I had that dream that that's exactly what we did.
Oh, no.
Wrote it down, folded it up, put it in that box, brought it here for you.
All right, now I shook
this
the box.
This is my prediction.
So I don't know which.
You gotta
I know it's
pitch
not
pitch
the
shot.
Card. Okay. All right.
God, don't read it. I don't want to know. Don't read it. Don't. Seriously.
All right. This is.
Don't know.
Cody, I want somebody to come in here because it says,
no.
We will go to the edge of the galaxy by swimming, and it will cost $5 million. This is my prediction, signed Jonathan. Look at this, Cody. This is, I want to say demonic. All right, now I'm obviously not going to ask you how you did it because.
Very well, thank you.
Yes, you did it very well.
That is the weirdest.
See? This is why this scares me.
Yes.
I enjoy seeing it. I like seeing it from a distance, from the up close. It's too scary.
Right.
I'm gonna be quite honest.
Well, that's
with
why
you.
I've had to make sure that my show is lighthearted and fun and funny.
Yeah.
So people forget just how terrifying that could be.
It really is.
Yeah.
We have to take a quick break. I have to catch my breath. I have to go out and get some holy water. Something has to be done to cleanse the cleanse the studio, because obviously there's forces here that should not be in here. Jonathan Pritchard is here, or you could call Johnny Zavon if he's mystifying you with a clear plastic box. That's what I like to do. LikeAMindReader.com is his website. If you're if you have a company, if you have a group that you think could benefit from learning how to think in somebody else's shoes, read someone else's mind, go to LikeAMindReader.com. You can see Jonathan July 29th at the Chicago Magic Lounge, 4707 North Broadway, ChicagoMagicLounge.com. We got to talk more about this because I am terrified on WGN. But I'll be honest, my heart is still racing, Cody. I'm not lying about that. Jonathan Pritchard is with me. Johnny Zavant just did a mentalist. He is a mentalist. He is a corporate trainer. He is a corporate speaker. And he will be at the Chicago Magic Lounge on July 29th, the website likeamindreader.com. All right, so I'm sure you've seen reactions like mine millions of times. It's frightening.
Yeah.
It's a little bit scary.
Yes.
But it's amazing. Now, as we were talking about this, so we did all these things. You had me pick the card, and we had the objects.
Mm-hmm.
And all right, so I could say, well, a card trick is a card trick in my mind. A lot of people do card tricks. There's probably a way that's a card trick. Okay.
Right.
And even with the wallet and the phone, I had said I would pick the phone up first, and you said, oh, would you like to change your mind? And I'm guessing, and you don't, but I'm guessing a lot of times people would react like I did and then, oh, rethink what they did and then change your mind. So, okay, I can maybe a little bit, but there's absolutely no way that I could figure out, because one, Roger's a nutball. We love Roger, but he's nuts.
Yeah.
So when I said you can pick one, I had, Edge of the Galaxy was probably the most sane thing you would have said.
That is pretty far out there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, all right. And then the callers for the other, those aren't, again, just callers. All right.
Right.
So while I may be able to figure, all right, a card trick's a card trick, the wallet, maybe you redirected me and I did what a lot of people will do. I know you can't tell us, but that's freaking crazy.
Yeah.
To be able to have you write that down when people are calling. We had, the callers were from all over. Roger's up there, I'm here, and there it is in the box.
So it.
Do you ever have somebody get mad? Like,
oh, absolutely.
They want to attack you because they're freaked out so bad that they want to take a swing at you?
Yes.
Really?
For reals. I kind of cut my teeth doing open mic nights at bars and clubs, and people will get so upset that their world no longer makes sense.
Yeah.
And anger is the only thing they have left. And I totally get it. I understand. Like, I don't hold any grudges, because it is kind of like thinking there's one more stair in the stairway and there's not.
Right.
Like, you can't fake that, but it is not a pleasant experience.
No.
And that's what magic is. That's what mentalism is.
Wow.
But in a safe context.
Right.
Right. Because I do it to kind of challenge people's assumptions that they can't do that thing they've always thought about doing.
Like,
right?
Go to the edge of the galaxy by
exactly,
swimming?
Exactly. So that's kind of the heart of what I do, is showing people you really can do amazing things if you put your mind to it. Because
wow.
I grew up in a single wide trailer on a dirt road and wound up traveling the world, entertaining the troops stationed overseas. I mean, that's not normal.
No,
right?
It's not. And what you just did to me is not normal.
That ain't right. That ain't right.
Yeah. And do you go back to North Carolina to the little town? Is Randall, the guy who taught you when you were in grade, is he still there?
Yeah, he's still there. We still stay in touch. Every time I go home for the holidays, we hang out by the fire and just kind of regale them of old war stories of being on the road. Yeah.
Now, you said your parents were behind you when you started all this.
Mm-hmm.
Are they still, are they baffled? Do you pull this like a Thanksgiving dinner? Do you do something and just, you know, ruin everybody's holiday? Cause now they have no idea what's going on.
Not too long ago, I did a kind of a welcome home show, right? Just kind of like, here's what I've been up to since I left for college.
Yeah.
And my dad looked at me and said, "You still see yourself in the mirror, right?" But yes, Dad. But they know it's all tricks and psychology and fun. Yeah,
it's very exciting. All right. So how could something like this, or can something like this translate when you're speaking to a group, when you're speaking to a company? Can you know? Do you want a Salesforce that's going to freak out their potential clients like to the point where people's hearts are palpitating?
Right. Well, I use demonstrations like this to illustrate the points that it's all about context and really information management.
Okay.
There's information that I know that you don't, that I make sure you don't know about.
Right.
There's stuff that you know that I don't know that maybe I could bluff like I knew it.
Yeah.
That helps in negotiation.
Okay.
Right? So these are just kind of demonstrations to illustrate the psychology that most people could only talk about in an abstract way. Well, I can show you, right? Wow. So the training sessions kind of take people behind the mental curtain of how people tick and then kind of explain how it all works.
Well, I don't know how it all works. I just know it worked and it was frightening. Are you all right, Roger? You seem to be,
well, he's got me thinking.
Uh-oh.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, well, when you... You know me very well then. But you mentioned that a lot of this comes from your premonitions.
That is a shorthand way for excessive lying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I've noted this before on other shows, I have had instances where I've had dreams and then anywhere from a week to 10 years later, I'm in that position.
Yeah, but Jonathan admitted he's a professional liar.
That is a really fun experience. And it's
freaky at times.
It's pareidolia. Pareidolia is kind of like finding features.
Okay.
Where, like, the face of Jesus in a grilled cheese sandwich.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Right? Where we have phenomenal ability to recognize patterns where there aren't any.
Okay.
Right? So, depending on how often you dream and all the weird experiences you have, it would be weirder if you didn't have weird experiences like that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you've got some sort of mojo you could use to
yeah, you don't have any, you don't
if
have
I had a mojo,
powers.
Trust me, I'd be at the end of the galaxy on my own planet right
now. You wouldn't be hanging out with me on a Sunday.
Heck no.
That'd be crazy. So at the Magic Lounge, people can expect to see Johnny's Avant messing with their minds, quite making them question their reality, and then freaking out.
Exactly. This is kind of the pure entertainment side of what I do. So you're
Which
not going to get a message. It's not training. It's just a
just
whole lot of
come
fun.
Come and see a show. And that's July 29th at the Chicago Magic Lounge, 4707 North Broadway, chicagomagiclounge.com is the website. Go there. Check out the schedule. There's magicians and illusionists and mentalists there on Thursdays and Saturday nights. And if you liked what you heard and you're thinking, hey, I could benefit from some of this training, Jonathan's website, the Jonathan Pritchard website, not Johnny's Avant. Likeamindreader.com is the website, and go there. You can find out all about Jonathan and see where he's going to be and learn about the different programs he has, whether it's corporate training, whether it's speaking as an MC, things like that, or whether it's just to come in and get your mind blown, which is terrifying. It was very nice to meet you, and, you know, I'll calm down in a little bit once you're gone. I know you're safely out of the building, and security escorts you out. Everything will be back to normal. It was a pleasure. Good luck. We'll talk to you again soon. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure.
It is my pleasure. Let's do this. Then it's news time on WGN. I wanted to, because all I had to do was explain to you what my last guest, Jonathan, the trick he did, and I showed you the piece of paper at the end, and your reaction was almost as good
as
mine.
It freaks you out, you know? You don't want to believe in any of that stuff. There's some trick to it, but gosh, that, you know, I was always thought that, you know, when you have the lions and the big illusions, I always think there's some way you could do that, because it's a big illusion. But when you're sitting right next to somebody and they pull that, you just can't figure out how in the world that happened.
Yeah, because that box never, it sat right here the entire time he was in here.
Right.
It was insane. So it was funny because I, you know, as an attorney, you've seen all kinds of stuff. You've been around. And that, that freaked you out as much as it freaked me out.
It really did.
Very crazy. A lot of things freaking a lot of people out this week. Not just mental tricks, but where do we even start? There's a whole list of things. I'll let you pick where we're going to start. Is it going to be pardoning? Is it going to be OJ? Is it going to be Rauner? Is it going to be these horrible, horrible, not even human beings, sacks of skin in Florida. Where would you like to begin?
Let's start with OJ, just because, okay. You know, it was just the whole week was filled with it. I did a lot of television on it. We covered it at Fox, and I was up there on the set just watching the thing go on, and it was fascinating for me, just fascinating to hear from OJ after all these years.
Yeah, and it was what was odd to me is that, you know, when he got the sentence, even the other people who were involved in the crime, he wasn't the one who held the gun. He was there, obviously, but he wasn't the mastermind. He wasn't the guy who made the real threats. But the judge in that case said, well, we've got to serve justice somehow. So the judge gave him the bigger sentence based on the other crime.
But it was how it was charged, Brian, because that state's attorney or the prosecutor did just really upcharged it. I mean, kidnapping, armed robbery, I mean, and all of these enhancements because there was a gun present and that there was an idea that OJ knew there was a gun present.
Right.
So I'm not sure if it was the judge as much as it was the prosecutor who wanted to just nail him. And I get it. That's what happens when you're a hated human being. I mean, even Martha Stewart, you know, was charged, mm-hmm. I think, largely because people hated her in some ways. But what
I can't make that centerpiece. She's got to do time.
She's got to do time, and yeah. I think OJ, what I thought was interesting is he has all this time. He has a lawyer who obviously had time to prepare him. He didn't seem prepared for what he was supposed to be doing because mm-hmm. when you're in a parole hearing, you're supposed to be humble and you're supposed to say I'm sorry. And what they want to hear, I'm aware that I did something wrong and I'm taking steps and have taken steps to not do it again. And when I get out, I have a plan so as not to go back in jail. Those are the things they want to hear. And OJ just seemed to want to tell everyone why it wasn't his fault. And as if this guy had never called him, it never would have been a crime. And I'm sorry for how people feel. A couple times he said, you know, I'm sorry, but it wasn't real. He wanted to explain that it was his own stuff he was stealing.
Right.
He was convicted.
That
defense
done.
Doesn't work. And even if you really believe that and you're angry about it, which I get why he is,
sure.
That's not what you do in a parole hearing,
right.
Because they don't want to hear anything.
You shut up and keep your head down and say what they want to hear.
And if you look at the worksheet that they had, you could get it online. It's a mm-hmm. worksheet that has little checked boxes for what gets to be considered. And if I were the lawyer, I'd be saying, okay, OJ, this is what they're going to want to hear, that you took all these classes.
Right.
But even as to that, you know, you think he would have taken every class in the prison. And he admitted himself that he didn't take every class because he didn't think he needed it.
Yeah.
What else are you doing for 9 years? I mean, really?
Are you busy?
I mean, I still think he showed his sociopathic side. I still think he showed his arrogance.
Yeah.
Although there's something likable about him and very glib and articulate, I would say. He just didn't acquit himself well. But it all worked out in the end.
What do you think the terms of parole are going to be?
No drugs, no alcohol, because alcohol was involved. Yeah, I think no bars. I think, you know, I think they're going to keep him on the straight and narrow. They're going to do drug drops for him. I think any infraction of the law, whether it's domestic violence or a serious traffic violation, I think they're going to have the right to go in and search his place, and they think they will. I think they're going to keep him under really close tabs. And it's not just the government in Nevada. Now it's going to be the officials in Florida who are going to be watching over him.
Now, you've seen a lot of people convicted. You've seen a lot of people paroled. You mentioned, you know, his arrogance, but his charm and all that. If you were a betting woman, what do you think? Does he end up back in jail?
I would say, if I'm betting, I'd say maybe yes.
Okay.
Or at least on the edge
in
of
trouble
that.
Again.
I think that he's got, you know, I think at age 70, his anger problems and his impulse control and the rage that he must have felt, if you think he committed the crime of the century, I think that dissipates a little bit when you get older. I think those kinds of things, particularly in men, I think that's even proven that men kind of relax about those things. But, you know, there's going to be people who come up to him and try to provoke him. I think there are going to be a lot of people who want a selfie with him. And
oh,
I think that they're going to be, he's going to be gracious and he's going to love that attention. But I still think there's going to be a guy in a restaurant somewhere who's going to walk up and say something really nasty to him and try to provoke him.
Right.
And he might just, you know, jump at the bait, and that could end him back up in jail.
Yeah, you know somebody's going to talk to him about the murders.
Yeah.
How do you not?
Yeah, there's always someone.
All right, so that's O.J.
That's O.J.
Now, I would like to pardon myself. I did some horrible things today, and I would like to pardon myself for them. But I don't know if I have those powers. We heard a lot this week, reports from the Washington Post and all that, the president's legal team, the president has been trying to figure out if he has the authority to pardon his family members and himself. Basically, the president does have the authority to grant pardons. We know that. How widespread are those powers?
Very widespread. There's nothing in the Constitution or anywhere that says a president cannot pardon himself, although there's scholarly things written all over the place. When I was in law school, there's a professor who wrote on this very issue. And, you know, the conclusion is that he probably can, but we're on uncharted grounds here.
Yes.
Pardons are very broad, and as long as it's a federal law, he can pardon for people for things they did, to things they might have done, for crimes that they are accused of or crimes they're going to be accused of.
Right.
So, yeah, certainly his family members. But here's the interesting thing. How does it affect impeachment or obstruction of justice? Let's just say that he pardons his whole staff. Right. In the middle of an investigation, well, the investigator can continue to investigate even if they're pardoned. That doesn't stop the investigator from trying to figure out and get to the bottom of what might have happened with Russia and all these other things, if anything at all happened. Of course, I'm not saying that it did happen.
Listen, this is in the news. This is the report. What's the legality? That's what we're talking about.
Right, because people get mad that I talk about it, but who are on the other side. No, but I'm just talking about the what-ifs that are being bantered about, which were bantered about with Hillary and Obama and everyone else.
Listen, go back to Watergate and President Nixon. I was reading this the other day. The Department of Justice provided legal guidance to him in a memo. The Office of the Legal Counsel said that under the fundamental rule that no one may be judge in his own case, the president cannot pardon himself. That was back in Watergate
and
time.
And that's an argument that is just not contemplated by the Pardon Act, because you can't sit in judgment of yourself.
Exactly.
It makes no sense. So again, you know, where that happens. But I do think if he starts to pardon people on his staff, that could be viewed to be obstruction of justice in a way. If he does that with the idea that he wants to halt the scrutiny of what's going on, that might add to the idea that he's trying to cover something up.
Well, and just in general, how do you pardon someone for something they haven't done yet? You know, it's or it hasn't. They haven't been charged with it. There's been no, because right now what's happening is just an investigation. There's no definitive proof yet. There's no charges. So how do you pardon somebody before
charge? Yeah, you can do that. I mean, even Nixon, he wasn't formally charged with anything.
Right.
When Ford pardoned him, he wanted to put an end to the scrutiny of it because he thought it was
over.
It was over, and it was bad for the country to continue to look at that. But yeah, I mean, anything up until the time that you pardon someone, you can pardon them for all their actions, whether they were charged or not.
Okay.
It's pretty broad.
That is very broad. So legally, a president could pardon himself. It has never been done, and as you mentioned, and you can read this a lot of places, a lot of legal scholars have said it's
I don't
a bad
know.
Idea.
See, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where I know the arguments on both sides, but it flies in the face of what you think when you think of a pardon and the purpose of the pardon and the idea that, like you said, you can't sit in judgment of yourself. But again, if he pardoned himself, would that be the next step to impeachment? Because that would look horrible.
Well, yeah.
It would look absolutely horrible.
And also, I mean, is this, you know, my thinking and my opinion is of when you don't testify on your own behalf.
Yes.
This is just me, it makes you look guilty.
Right.
And I know there's a million reasons why why your attorney will not have you testify. I understand all that, but I think other people think that way too. It's like, well, if you're innocent, why don't you talk? And on the other side of that coin, if you're pardoning yourself, you must be guilty.
Right.
Right? And again, this could go for the president. This could go for anybody. It doesn't matter. If you pardon yourself, you've done something to be pardoned for.
Do you remember there was talk when Obama was on his way out that he was going to pardon Hillary Clinton for anything she might have done with the emails? Right. And there was talk that Hillary said, don't you even think about it, because I didn't do anything. So that would look even worse than it does now.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, it's just part of that, my thing. All right, Karen Conti is here, 312-981-7200. If you have a question for Karen, you need to get it in quickly, 312-981-7200. We'll get to those questions. We'll get to some more. And I've got to talk, I want to talk to you about the issue with Rauner's body, man, because this is an issue that can come back for a lot of
Absolutely.
People. Lots of people. So we'll get to that on the other side. It is WGN. A real quick one, and I'm sure we've covered this. We may have even covered it last week, but somebody texted in. What is probate, and when does someone's assets have to pass through probate?
Probate happens when you have assets and you've either planned your estate, your will, to have it go through probate, or you don't have a plan and it has to go through probate. There's a limit on the amount of money that you can have. If it's under, I believe it's $100,000, I think it's exclusive of real estate, but I'd have to be checked on that one because I don't do this kind of work.
Okay.
Then it can pass without probate, so that the heirs can then sign what we call a small estate affidavit and just take care of the assets if they're under $100,000. But if they're over $100,000, then it has to go through probate unless you have a trust or something that takes you out of probate.
Okay. Let's switch to this Governor Rauner's quote-unquote body man, the travel assistant. He was fired Monday after his first day on the job because it was found that he had tweeted some racially insensitive things in the past. The Twitter account is now gone, but his old tweets were, they surfaced as part of a new Twitter account that was parodying Rauner's transition from old guard Illinois Republican operative. So this guy had tweeted things in his past. He gets this job, and now all of a sudden you look at the new communications director went back and was deleting tweets. He copped to it. He said why he was deleting them, but the point is the same. This guy didn't go back and delete tweets. They were found out, and he was fired. And people are like, well, that doesn't seem fair. It doesn't seem people can get, as we've said many times, right? This is a for cause. You can be fired for cause.
You can be fired for any cause.
Anything.
And even if someone doesn't think they're offensive, if the governor thought they were offensive, then he could fire him for any reason or not hire him. One of the things people just don't understand, and I don't get this. Like, let me just give you an example.
Yes.
I refer business to other lawyers, and I have a lawyer who I refer business to. He's a great lawyer. And, you know, he takes on really multi-million dollar cases. Very, very good lawyer. But I noticed he started doing stuff on Facebook that's really, it's politically, you know, aggressive,
yes.
But like nasty, personal, and bordering on some, you know, racist, kind of sexist stuff. And I'm watching it, and he's nasty to other people, and I referred a piece of business to him, and that client came back to me and said, I looked at him on Facebook, and I would never have him as my lawyer.
Wow.
So at this point, I don't refer him any work anymore because of what he says on Facebook. Now, why would this guy who's public reputation, who anyone could go on and see and maybe not like what he's saying,
right.
You know? I mean, it's border offensive.
Well, and the defense of people like that would be, well, listen, it's my page. I'm an American.
Yeah.
I have the right of free speech. And they always forget that the responsibility that comes with free speech. Yes, you can say what you want, but then you have to pay the consequences for that speech, which may be you not referring him business or other clients leaving him or whatever.
I mean, even, you know, even in my office where I host people, clients, I try not to have any. I've got pictures of myself with governors and different, you know, political people.
Sure.
But I learned to take those down because I don't want anyone thinking I'm a Democrat or a Republican or anything. I don't want them to even know about my political
thoughts. You're a lawyer.
Because I'm your lawyer, and I don't want you to hate me for my political thoughts, which is what the world is about right now. I mean, people don't like people who don't have the same thoughts that they do. This is the way it is, unfortunately. But I just warn everybody, when you're on Facebook, even swearing on Facebook, I see so many professionals get on and say, you know, just funny things. I mean, I would think that they're funny, but a lot of people don't like swearing. And what if your employer, a potential employer, looks you up and you swearing like a sailor, and that may not be reflective of how the employer wants to have his workplace.
No, and that's, you know, we focused on that message for young people, but it's a message that
everybody
needs to pay attention to. That, it, you know, once it's out there, it's out there.
It is.
And you know, this guy got this good job. He's going to be traveling with the governor. He's going to be right there with him all the time. And then, boom, racially insensitive and homophobic statements come to light, and that's it.
And if an employer has 50 choices of who to hire, right, and you have something kind of, you know, suggestive or controversial on your Facebook, guess what? Mm. You're in the garbage can. So, yeah.
So before you go and interview for a job, quickly go through and edit all your social media and see what's going on down there.
Yep.
Can I say something real quick about that?
You, sure. Of course, as a social media guy during the week, yes. What?
There is an option in Facebook privacy settings to set all of your past posts to friends only.
Ah, that's a good, that's what
you should do.
So if you're worried about something being public, and it's just in the privacy and settings, they can, you'll kind of have to Google how to do it. I don't remember exactly how. But
Cody, let me ask you this, because you probably know better than I do, but I thought that there were services that kind of capture on any given moment what's public. So even if you take it off, there are services that can go back and find out things that you posted but maybe later, you know, covered up.
It might depend on the network or the service. I mean, yeah, on Twitter everything's public, so that's out there. I mean, assume anything's out there.
Yeah.
Right.
But there are ways to kind of rein it in if you're looking for a job.
Got it.
Because I've done that before. I think my last couple jobs, I was like, just in case, I'm just going to set everything I've ever done to friends only so it's not in public domain.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's good thinking. Good advice.
Thank you,
Tony, giving good advice.
Yeah.
Just in general, what do lawyers have to prove to get a change of venue? We got the Van Dyke lawyers. His lawyers trying to get a change of venue.
It's a real strong burden because there's a presumption that you are to be tried by a jury of your peers,
right,
which generally means in the neighborhood in the area where the crimes were committed. On the other hand, there's a constitutional right to a fair trial by an impartial jury. So you have to show that you really cannot get an impartial trial in the area because of pretrial publicity, which is normally the reason. And that doesn't mean that you get to try a case in front of people who never heard of the case. A lot of people think, I need 12 people who have never heard of Laquan McDonald.
But how can you're
not
never going to find that?
You're never going to find that. And frankly, there's a lot of jury experts who say you don't want that. You don't want someone who's been living, you know, in a shell for 5 years and never heard of this, because those people are kind of, you never know how they're going to, you know, pay attention. You never know how. You'd rather have someone who knows something but can put aside prejudices and preconceived notions and listen to the evidence.
Yeah.
What's interesting here, Brian, is that they've chosen, Van Dyke's lawyer has chosen a bench trial, which in cases of police misconduct, you see a lot of lawyers do that, thinking a jury may not be as receptive, especially if you get minorities on a jury in Cook County.
Right.
But if he's moving venue, and why is he moving venue if it's a judge? So I don't know if he's going to then take a jury in some other jurisdiction. There's another option, which they had in Gacy, which is they got jurors in Rockford to come into Chicago.
Oh.
Because the evidence and the witnesses and all the forensic stuff was here in Chicago. So that's another option where you can actually bust jurors
in. So you import a jury.
Yeah, exactly.
But again, we have to assume that just about anybody in this area, even if they brought somebody from downstate, they will have heard of this case.
Yeah, because it made national news.
Right.
And now with, you know, CNN, you know, they ran that story like every minute on the minute.
Yeah.
But again, I think that, you know, the argument would be that in Chicago, it's just so much more charged because it happened here.
Right.
And then there are things like Mayor Emanuel said some things publicly over and over again about how this guy has to be fired. And when you have public officials here in Chicago saying that these, you know, the defendant, you know, is guilty, that's pretty powerful stuff.
All right. So what do you think? Do you think he'll get it?
I think they might. I think they might. This is a case where that might happen.
Okay.
If they're going to have a jury trial. But if they have a bench trial with the judge, a judge is going to be impartial.
Yeah,
they don't really have a right to ask for a change of venue.
Interesting. Karen Conti's answering your legal questions. 312-981-7200. People always wait till too late and then they miss out. So how can they get a hold of you during the week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me the facts, kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com.
More with Karen after the news. That's next on WGN. Somebody texted, they asked if you would please repeat your phone number and email address. That's an easy way to start out the half hour.
Yes, I can answer that.
All right.
312-332-7800. That's Fear 800. I didn't make it that way, but that's what it's spelled.
Fear 800.
Fear 800.
Very nice.
And it's kconti at kcontilaw.com.
There you go. Somebody wants to know if police officers have to, if they're legally obligated to tell you why they're asking you for ID, if they stop you for ID, you know, if they stop you for something, do they have to say, I want to see your ID. I think you've done blah,
they,
blah, blah.
They really don't have an obligation at that point to tell you why they've pulled you over. And they sometimes don't. They have to have probable cause to stop you, but they don't have to tell you what that probable cause was.
So even if they stop you walking down the street, they have to be able
To justify it later. Whether that's in a camera, whether that's in notes, whether that's just observation, so you had a signal out or you were speeding or whatever it is, they have to have a reason to stop you. And then, you know, the next step would be, you know, if you're concerned and you're confused, you should always be polite. Always comply. You know, there's no reason to get nasty because maybe there is a routine stop of some type that they're just asking you some routine question. But you can at some point say, am I free to go? Are you detaining me? Because once they detain you,
then you're under arrest.
Then you're under arrest and then certain rights kick in.
Okay.
But, you know, they need to make that determination one way or the other. But again, doing that at the right time in the right tone of voice probably is something to think about.
All right. Now, we've talked many times when you've been here about legality versus morality, that things may not be illegal even though they are unethical and immoral. And that is coming to light with this case in Florida with these five teenagers who not only watched a man drown, but videotaped it and laughed and taunted him as he drowned. I don't understand how people get to that point, how people become so heartless, how they become so uncaring. So that's on a moral issue that hurts my soul. But then something that hurts even more is the fact that there's no laws in most of the country, in Florida and then even here in Illinois, most states, that you have to offer assistance to someone who is suffering.
Right.
And it's amazing to me that we should have to have a law that you would have to do that, but also that it's not. You know,
you would think that on something this egregious and something that we can all agree on that is such a strong moral, yes, you should have saved this guy. You should have helped him or tried to help him or called for help I don't know why there is no law, and I don't know that you could make a law. But one thing that I did see, I don't know if you saw this, but just maybe even just late yesterday, the police chief there said that they might try to charge the boys with failing to report.
Yes.
A death, which is a crime under Florida law. It's probably only a misdemeanor. I don't know exactly, but because they're trying to charge these kids with something.
Sure, because they said one showed absolutely no remorse.
Right.
Some of the others a little bit, but not much. And the police chief, like you said, he's trying to get them on this one for not reporting to the failure to provide aid is not it, but what was it? Yeah, it was something about
failure to report a death.
Oh, death to the medical examiner. Right.
Yeah.
So that's the case.
So basically, the law is that unless there's certain things in place, that you have no duty to come to the aid of someone. So, with the exceptions to that, would be if you've created the danger. Okay. So let's just say that you push someone in the swimming pool. All right.
Right.
Even in horseplay.
Yeah.
And now they're drowning. Now you would have an obligation
have
to aid because you created that situation.
Okay.
That would be a good example. The second part of this would be if you have a special duty. Like if you're a parent, you can't just let your kid drown. If you're a lifeguard, right, you have a contractual duty. You have even employer-employee duty sometimes is, you know, you have a duty to help your employee.
Okay.
You know, obviously policemen and nurses and people like that have duties that are higher than your standard duty. But otherwise, as just a spectator and a bystander, you have no obligation. The laws, the civil laws make it take you out of the civil liability, the Good Samaritan laws, so that if you, in fact, did do something to try to save someone, you didn't do it perfectly. Normally speaking, you are immune from civil liability.
Which seems strange that we have to have a law for that, but we don't have a law that you have to help someone.
Right.
But we have this law that if you do help somebody, you know, we know people are going to try to sue you because you messed up their arm.
Yeah, that's supposed to encourage people to do the right thing. And there's, you know, in this case, there was just no, there was no justification
Nothing.
For this at all. But I do understand people don't want to go into a burning car. I do understand people don't want to go into a riptide and
but we
save
saw,
somebody.
But a week ago, and that's what killed me too. This story is in Florida. A week ago in Florida, we see the people form the human
that
chain
was the coolest thing.
To go out.
Yeah.
There, people are running from up and down the beach and going out to help these people.
Amazing.
And yes, they were not They were not legally obligated to do that, but they were human beings, and they saw somebody in trouble, and they all, and it took a while to get that chain out to those people, but they got them.
And you, the, what we don't see probably are the people that try to save people and die. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see that all the time with parents jumping in after their kids, and they both go down.
Just a couple weeks ago here in Lake Michigan, I forget if it was the young person, the kid's uncle or somebody, a family member jumped in to save them, and that didn't make it.
No. And I do think to make ourselves feel better, because when I read a story like this, I just think, is this the way of the world? Is this the way that kids are? But I don't think it is, Brian. I think that for every one of these stories, there's like 2,000 stories of people being heroic and helping people and going down on the tracks and pulling someone out. Right. And but this is just a spectacular instance of lack of morality and maybe even the group mentality where one person starts laughing about it and the young boys are all, you know, to jump on board with that.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, I'll be honest. I hope they do find something to charge them with, even if it's the most minor thing. That and I don't think with these five, I don't think it's going to send the message that they intend. I don't think there's any way to get through to kids like this, and that's unfortunate. You know, you've got kids aged 14 to 16, so they're still theoretically young enough that maybe they could be changed, but if you let that happen, I think you're beyond help.
I kind of agree with you on that.
And that's too bad. All right, I have to ask you about this. I saw this story last week. We did not get to it, and I wonder, because you are a member of the California Bar, and California, the Supreme Court, is being asked to lower the standards of the California Bar. They're saying the bar exam in California is too hard. It's second only to, I believe, Maine as the hardest. The bar for passage of the bar in California is the second hardest in the country. And they're saying, listen, it's too hard. And we're not, you know, some good lawyer, potential lawyers are not passing the bar. If I was if I was in your shoes, a member of the California bar who passed that hard test, I'd be like, what are you talking about? You can't make the test easier.
Well, I think it's not that the test is going to be easier. I think it's just they're giving you a higher percentage that you have to get correct in order to pass it.
And, well, yeah, by making it easier,
the
score will be low. You need a lower score.
You know, what happens is if there's a glut of lawyers, they raise the bar, okay? And in the last 5 years, we had a glut of lawyers up until about four or five years ago, and kids stopped going to law school as much because I think it was student loans and all these other things, and lawyers weren't getting jobs. They were waiting tables.
Yeah.
You know, I teach at DePaul, and I had a lot of kids who graduate without a job. Most of them, as a matter of fact.
And a huge debt load.
Not to mention college and law school.
Because it used to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you went to law school and you did well in law school, you were pretty much set.
Guaranteed.
You came out, you were in a nice firm, you were making good money.
Especially in Chicago, which is a huge legal market. Whether you wanted to prosecute or whether you wanted to do pro bono work, whether you wanted to work in a big firm, you know, if you did reasonably okay and you went to a reasonably good law school, you really pretty much got a job. And also, most people pass the bar. We call it Massachusetts here.
Okay. Is that right?
Because, you know, I think it's like 75 or 76%. Okay. I teach bar review, so I'm one of these people who goes on the video, and I teach the kids how to study for the bar in certain areas of the law. And so I'm very aware of, you know, when they lower the passage rate and they hire the passage rate. So right now they're trying to get more lawyers enrolled in law school. So that's one of the things that's allowing, you know, California to make those arguments. But California always had a hard bar. They wanted to keep people out for a couple of reasons. There were a lot of unaccredited law schools, meaning they weren't, you know, given credentials. So were graduating from these crummy law schools and sitting and taking the bar exam. I was sitting next to, this was 20 years ago, a guy who had a T-shirt that had, like, crossed out seven times. It was his seventh attempt to pass the California bar exam.
And do they put any limit on how many times you can take it?
I don't think so. Back then, I don't think they did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think I would have given up.
Yeah. At that point, I would question if being a lawyer was actually my calling.
Right.
Probably
here's the other thing.
After the fourth time, don't you say, I should have gone into something else.
My view on this is if you don't pass the bar exam, you probably have a problem taking tests because if you study correctly and you take the review class, it's not that it's easy. It's not. But going through law school is not easy. I think it's harder to go through law school and learn all the things you need to learn in law school rather than memorize a bunch of stuff for the bar.
Do you think people just, I mean, it's got to be a very pressurized environment.
Yeah.
So some people do put too much pressure on themselves and don't test well. Doesn't mean they're smart, but do you happen to know a percentage that don't pass the first time? And then maybe pass the second time?
Actually, if you fail it the first time, your chances of passing it the second time are lower than the average. You think that most people then pass it, but it's actually lower because, like I said, if you have a problem either because you have, you know, maybe dyslexia or maybe your timing is bad and you are under pressure or maybe you just don't have time to study for it, whatever it is, whatever happened the first time tends to happen the second time too. It's, you know, but, you know, you can look at statistics all day long about these things. And California is just a hard bar exam. It's a 3-day exam as opposed to a 2-day. It's exhausting. And California law is different than other law. We have community property, which is very complicated and kind of archaic in my view. So people coming from out of state wanting to practice there also aren't prepared for it. So that's another reason why there's a low passage rate. So there's all kinds of reasons why people pass the bar and why they don't.
I would imagine if you've been a practicing attorney in another state, some people would probably think, well, I know the law.
Right.
How hard is it? I passed it once. I've been practicing for 20 years. I can pass this test.
Well, when I took it, I had been practicing law in Illinois for about 10 years.
Okay.
So, you know,
some stuff.
I had to step up just because I was, you know, doing a lot of this stuff there. But again, you have to learn the specific laws. You know, right. New York has a hard bar. Florida has a hard bar.
Louisiana has weird laws, too.
The Napoleonic Code is still in existence down there.
It's
so
crazy.
Yeah.
All right.
Interesting.
Karen Conti is here, 312-981-7200. If you have a legal question, get it in now. Last segment with Karen coming up in a few minutes. But, of course, people will wait, and then at 8:55, they will call and say, why can't I talk to Karen? So how can they get a hold of you during the
week? You can email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com or call me at 312-332-7800.
All right, more with Karen on the other side. It's WGN. Elizabeth has been holding on. She is in Chicago. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, how are you?
We are great, thanks. What's your question?
So my question is, I've been living in this apartment for about 14 years, and my landlord passed away, and his son has taken over. And my ex-husband had an accident, and we're still great friends, and I wanted to bring him home to my apartment to help with his recovery, and my new landlord wants to double my rent. Is that legal? I don't have a lease with him.
No, wow, that's too bad. And good for you being nice to your ex-husband. I love to hear those stories. You're a month-to-month tenant, which means, and there's all kinds of rules about this, and I don't know, I can't tell you the exact number of days that they have to give you notice, but, he can raise the rent, absolutely.
Wow.
And, but, you know, your rent is good for at least a month, but then he has to give you notice of the new amount. Otherwise, it's the old amount. I don't know if he's done that. Has he done that officially with you?
No, because I've just kind of like brought it up to him and like how much, you know, he would be adding on. And my rent right now is $700. It's a one-bedroom small basement apartment. And he told me that if I move my ex-husband in, that he would the rent would be $1,400.
I mean,
once I moved him in,
I don't see that there's anything illegal about doubling the rent because he's moving in. It's what is the market value of that apartment? Is it more like $1,400? Is that a fair lease amount?
That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
I mean, the neighborhood is a higher end, but I mean, the unit itself is not. I mean, it hasn't had any repairs. Nothing's been changed since I've been there.
You know, and you're saying things that make it look like it's unfair, but from a legal standpoint, he has an absolute right to change that rent and whatever he wants. I mean, and as long as he's not discriminating against you based on race or age or something like that, you know, you're pretty much at his whim. I mean, your best bet in a situation like this would be to get some extra time to move out if you need to move out because you can't afford that.
Right.
Or to just try to reason with him and say, you know, I'm going to have to move out. I've been a great tenant. Gosh, 14 years. Who wants to get rid of a tenant who's paying rent on time every day, you know, and taking care of the property because there's so many bad people out there? And plus,
it's
costly.
Just another person, and there is not, you're not changing anything about the the apartment.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense, but it does make sense maybe if he hadn't changed the rent in a long time, that now he's saying, well, there's a new sheriff in town, and now the fair market value of that apartment is more to $1,400.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, your argument is going to be more from a reason and a please standpoint rather than a legal standpoint.
Right. Well, I'm planning, I said, if I can't reason, we're going to move. But it's unfortunate because I've been there so long now. But I think it's not even that he would be there all that long. It's just a little bit more recovery time. And it's like, it's kind of sad.
It is sad. It is. It's very sad.
Is he willing to leave it at 7 if your ex-husband doesn't move in, or is he changing it either way?
That's what he says. But like I've talked to my family, they're like, get it in writing, because I mean, I don't know. It just seems like we're willing to give more since there is an extra person, but I think going a whole $700 more is excessive. So.
I don't really see how that could be discrimination based upon something that is prohibited by the law. I know you can't discriminate against children and stuff like that, and married, not married, but I just don't see an avenue here to make that argument. And even if you did, were you going to do sue him? And you're better off moving on.
I was listening to you, and I thought I'm going to ask because I figured it wasn't especially since we don't have a lease, but it's like. I'll ask at least that I know.
Yeah, no,
well,
we're
glad
you
called.
Thank you so much taking my call.
Good luck.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thanks.
Good luck. Yeah, that's rough. And it's, everything in writing. You say that all the time. Everything in writing.
Yeah.
Whether it's a lease or everything.
A lot of people, they stay over their lease, okay?
Sure.
But the beauty of that is you can move out pretty much at any time.
Yeah.
So you have flexibility when you don't have a lease, but when you don't have a lease, they can change the terms of it.
Flexibility goes
within
both ways.
30 days. Yes, exactly.
All right, here's an interesting case. We were talking about California law. A 16-year-old goes into a gas station and buys a scratch-off ticket. Goes home. Hey, guess what? $5 million winner. Ding, ding, ding.
Yay.
Yes, that's great news. So his dad goes to two different places to verify this prize. He goes to a 7-Eleven. They say, yep, you're a winner. He goes to another place. Yep, you're a winner. So he goes to cash it in, and then he gets a letter from the lottery commission saying, yeah, you don't win because your son bought the ticket. And he wasn't eligible to play the lottery, so you can't charge us. Now, the guy is suing, obviously, and he says, listen, the mobile station where my kid bought the ticket, nobody asked him how old he was. They just sold him the ticket. So,
interesting.
The law is you have to be 18 to play. The kid bought it. Can they prove that the kid played it? Or did the kid buy it and take it home, give it to his dad? And the dad played it. How do you prove who played it? And is the possession of the ticket, once you sign it and it's in your house, where's the line?
Well, this is not the sexiest answer that you can expect, but I mean, it's all going to be dictated by what the ticket law says, what it says on the ticket are the rules of the lottery. What do the rules say? What does play mean? Does play mean buy it? Does play mean scratch it off? Does play mean claim it? Can someone go in and buy it, but then they're not playing it and not claiming it? So I would have to look at the cold hard language to see what qualifies here. The second argument is, let's just say the language is bad and it means that you can't sell a lottery ticket to a 16-year-old. Well, what did the store have a problem? Because why would the store, not check his ID if that's in fact what they were supposed to be doing? And by selling, did they somehow step over the rules of the lottery? I would say that maybe you have some sort of cause against the store for selling that ticket, but not against the lottery if you're not following their rules. All of these things, again, like most things, you have to look at the cold hard rules, and usually that's in writing either on the ticket itself or on the website for the lottery. But certainly it's worth arguing about. And it's worth arguing that you're right. If they're not going to check your age, and what does it mean to play?
Right.
If the kid took the stuff home and dad played it, then, yeah.
It, Dad's got the ticket. Dad yeah. walks in to claim it.
And it was his money probably right. that went to pay for it.
So who knows who scratched it off.
So you could make all those arguments, especially for $5 million.
I'd make a lot of arguments.
Uh-huh.
Somebody texting in for Elizabeth, who they said if the caller lives in Chicago, which Elizabeth did, they can she can contact the Metropolitan Tenants Organization.
Okay.
The Metropolitan Tenants Organization. All right, we are out of time, as always. How will people get a hold of you during the week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right, and you'll be on with Steve at 6:40 Wednesday morning.
That's right.
And you'll be back here next Sunday night?
I will.
Perfect.
All
Have
right.
a wonderful
you
week.
Too.
We will talk to you then. All right, I got to wrap things up. And then Rick Kogan's not here tonight. We'll find out who's sitting in after hours when we come back in about, 7 seconds. So, guys, grab a seat quick. It's WGN.
The weird, wild, wonderful.
WGN Plus. It's a whole other world.
All right. Thank you for listening and being part of the program. Have a wonderful week. I will talk to you again next Sunday night. Rick Kogan usually comes your way after the news, but Rick Kogan isn't here. But I see Chris Jones is here, and he has brought Mark Carroll along with him, and they are going to be sitting in for Rick. Hello, Chris.
Yeah, we got a big show.
Wait a minute.
We don't want to tune out right now. We're going to be talking about the movie Dunkirk, which
we just saw that together. We sat together. It was very cute.
70 millimeter print.
Did you get to see it in 70 millimeter?
Yes, we did. So we talk about that.
Musicox.
That's very nice.
But not IMAX 70 millimeter, just straight, which is still pretty good. A lot of millimeters.
And we're going to talk about Lester Bangs and rock criticism, the great rock critic Lester Bangs. We're going to talk about a new Broadway-bound musical. We got all kinds of stuff.
Talk about summer at the midpoint. We're going to talk about waiting in line for lobster
rolls. How long are you guys going to be on?
We're just going
to
race by.
We're going to talk about missing airline flights. We're going to talk about Clip and Tony. Okay, we won't talk about
I wish
that.
You had really planned for your show. It doesn't sound like you put any prep on it. But good luck. I'm sure it'll be fine. Chris Jones
Thank
and Mark
Carroll
coming up
Thanks,
on the
Brian.
Other side of the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio and then make your murder plans very quietly because the machines are listening. The news is sponsored by Rizza Acura. 9 o'clock, here's Roger Badish.